Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to talk about the dark programming language, a language that's a high-level language like traditional languages, but compiles down to JavaScript so it runs in every browser. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 245, recorded March 20th, 2013. Dart. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com. Yes, he's back. He's back from his long trip. More about that later. I'm also speaking to you from the 13th floor of the Howard Hughes Center in Los Angeles, so the background looks a little different from the last time I was on. I'm back from my South America trip. Just said that. I'm back with my big blue Yeti, too, which you can't see because it's slightly off-screen down here. So if I sound a little bit different, like sound a little bit better, it's because I've got my good mic again. This is really, really nice. I brought it down with me from Portland. But we could not do this show without a co-host. Well, we've tried. We've done it a couple times, so that's completely irrelevant. But we have a co-host this week once again, Aaron Newcomb. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks. Good to have you back. It seems like it's been forever since you've been gone.
Yeah, I've even forgotten how to do the show a couple times here already. So what member do I put? What do I type? I can't figure this out. I even forgot my local side recordings, and I didn't turn off my podcast warning on Adium and all the things. I was like, okay, I'm completely lost. I did put my phone in airplane mode, though, so I did remember that part of it. But I'm just really confused. I lose track of this stuff. So we'll talk a little bit more about the stuff I was doing in South America at the end of the show, but I just want to say we have a really great show today. I have been looking forward to this show for a long time, and I really think it's going to match with a lot of things I want to do. We have Seth Ladd, who works at Google, works on the Dart project. He's the developer advocate with the Dart project. Dart is a programming language that compiles to JavaScript. So in other words, you write in Dart, and Dart has lots of modern features like classes and packages and high-level object types like map and set and array and things like that. But the whole goal of it is to be able to compile down to normal JavaScript. So that way it'll run in most browsers, most modern browsers anyway. But for the browsers that have the Dart VM built into it, like I think they're eventually going to put this in Chrome and maybe a few others, you'd be able to actually load the Dart file natively, and it will just load right in and work right along. What do you know about Dart so far?
Well, not a lot. I've heard about it because I'm taking this class from Udacity called HTML or Programming Games in HTML5 or Developing Games in HTML5. So they do a lot of JavaScript, a lot of HTML5, a lot of DOMs, a lot of JSON queries, things like that. And Dart has been mentioned a few times. And so I've kind of been playing around with it since I knew it was coming up and kind of looking into it. So I'm really curious to find out whether Dart would be a good alternative for doing things like games or replacing what you typically do in JavaScript, so you just don't have to worry about it anymore. Just go with Dart, because Dart certainly seems like something a little bit more akin to what I'm used to, coming from a Perl, Python, type of background. Even going back to BASIC, it doesn't have any application here at all. But certainly coming from those types of languages, it'll be interesting to see if it's easier to pick up. Start from there, pick up Dart, and then let the compiler worry about the JavaScript, as opposed to starting to, trying to get more familiar with JavaScript and apply it backwards to what I'm used to.
Yeah. And I'm being asked by my clients to do more smarter and smarter web applications. So I think this is definitely going to be something I want to look at, too. I've looked at a lot of other things that we've talked about on the show over the 245 episodes. So, but I think this one's got some legs, especially since Google's behind it. So that might actually push pretty hard. And I think the community's also pretty large, too, if I'm not mistaken. But we'll get into all that in just a moment. Let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Seth Ladd, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Very cool. Where are you speaking to us from?
I am in beautiful Mountain View, California today.
All right. Very cool. I've been there many times. In fact, I used to work a lot in Silicon Valley, and Mountain View is where I used to drive through a lot of, if not actually be in. So that was really nice. Not been there much lately, though, mostly down here in Los Angeles. So at the beginning of the show, I gave what I thought was my overview, at least, of what I believe the Dart language is about and what it's aiming for. But why don't you go ahead and give us the 30,000-foot view, and we'll drill down from there.
Sure. Thanks. First off, it's important to understand that Dart's much more than a language. It's really a comprehensive batteries-included platform to help developers from all different platforms iOS, Android, C++, JavaScript, come to the web and build really fantastic apps that really take advantage of all the amazing features that are in the browser today. And we believe that when you add in, say, WebGL for accelerated 3D graphics and WebSockets for real-time bidirectional communication and IndexedDB for local storage and on, all the great features of the browser platform today, and you want to do this across mobile, tablets, desktops, Chromebooks, the complexity goes up. And when the complexity goes up, we think that it can help developers with a more structured platform, more structured language with built-in tools and libraries. And when you kind of package it all together and give them just more comprehensive batteries included platform to develop on, then they're going to be a lot happier, productive, and developing really awesome apps for the web. And that's, in the end, what we want to see.
So it's really interesting because, you know, I've been in the industry for 35 years now, to watch this progress back and forth. It seems like there's this wave in and out from centralize everything, make it all central, the stupid terminal in front, and then distribute it all by developing desktop apps that are all really, really smart but take a lot of work to develop. And then centralize everything again by making it all smart apps that are web-based with really stupid, dumb clients. So you're saying this is the wave back the other direction once again, where the smartness is all over on the desktop or now handheld units. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that's a really good insight, in that the power now is in the browser, and these machines and phones and tablets are getting more powerful every day. And so, right, I would say the pendulum is shifting a little bit more to go ahead and utilize those multi-cores that are in your phone, and go ahead and utilize the almost 1 terabyte of space that you get on your laptops these days. And for the longest time, the web hasn't been able to really take advantage of the CPU power that you've had, or the great bandwidth that you've had, or the storage that you had. And now that some of these APIs are beginning to unlock these features that you get from your operating systems and hardware, it makes sense now to put some of that behavior, business logic, back over onto the client, so that the user gets faster response times, less janky performance, even works offline when you're disconnected. So, yeah, we think that this pendulum is definitely shifting a little bit.
And so one of the things I like that's really interesting about this so far is that because you're saying it has to be cross-platform, it can't just be, say, Chrome with some extra plugin in it.
That's correct.
That you're compiling down Dart and its libraries to raw JavaScript. How does that work?
That's a great question and an excellent point. Everything that we're talking about today does deploy across the modern web. We drew a line in the sand and it said modern web browsers have the power and features that we want to help developers deploy to. And we want a Dart developer, which is really just a web developer, to access all of that. So we built we're on our third generation Dart to JavaScript compiler, itself written in Dart, which I guess means you can compile the compiler with itself, which is kind of cool. And so that will turn your Dart code and the bundled libraries and the packages you might include into what I call vanilla JavaScript and HTML, so that it can deploy across, say, IE9 and above, Firefox, Safari, obviously the latest Chrome. And none of these browsers, of course, know about the Dart virtual machine, which is another way to run Dart code. But that's okay, because we compiled the JavaScript.
So that's an interesting point. If you can compile Dart using the Dart to JavaScript compiler to JavaScript, could I load all that into a browser and have it understand Dart files natively?
You could, and maybe someday we'll provide some sort of cool service to do that for you. But I think the majority of the deployments of Dart apps will be, you'll sit on your development system and you'll write Dart code and you'll test in a version of Chromium we affectionately call Dartium, which has a Dart virtual machine embedded inside. Now, the really nice thing about this is it enables extremely fast iteration cycles. And that's something that we don't want to sacrifice for our developers. One of the great things about web development is it's very iterative. You can just type a little bit of lines of code, hit reload in your browser. That reload in your browser is effectively acting like a compiler. Boom, you see the changes right there, and you can iterate very fast. And we don't want to sacrifice that at all with Dart. And so when you put a Dart virtual machine into the browser, you get that same experience. Now, right at that last moment, right before you deploy to the open web, you will run the Dart to JavaScript compiler, and you will deploy out your Dart file and that compiled JavaScript. And no matter what virtual machine or engine that browser is running, he's going to be able to run your app.
Now, there's a lot of high-level language, or maybe just syntactic sugar language to JavaScript compilers out there. How would you contrast this with those projects? Why is this? Why do why
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think it's important to understand that Dart, the language, is much more than just a different syntax on top of JavaScript. Dart, the language, really brings in new semantics and new core libraries. And again, of course, all this does compile down to JavaScript, but contrast this to something like, say, CoffeeScript. CoffeeScript is a really slick language that just kind of paints a different coat on top of JavaScript in that they change the syntax, but all the semantics are exactly the same. If, say, you know, adding a number to a map or what happens when you access an integer out of range on a list, all that still stays exactly the same when you work with something like CoffeeScript. In Dart, however, we have different semantics. So the behavior, say, accessing an index out of range on a list will throw, and forgive me, I forget the exact term, but like an index out of bounds exception. And so we'll compile that behavior all down to JavaScript as well. So I think Dart is more ambitious in the sense that we're able to, say, go farther and add features like getters and setters to the language itself, operator overloading to the language itself. Real block scope, lexical this, more probably sane equality semantics, and the list goes on and on. So it goes much, much farther than I think the syntactic, just transformation-based languages like CoffeeScript.
So maybe talk a little bit more about that at this point. I mean, I think that's a good segue. Why is that really the itch that made somebody scratch and create Dart in the first place? Was it really around JavaScript and the idiosyncrasies that JavaScript brings in that a traditional language wouldn't necessarily have?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think every language, of course, has idiosyncrasies. But I think part of it was, what happens when you take a more fresh approach to programming the browser? And what happens when you take the experience learned from building systems like GWT or Clojure Compiler? And what happens when you take the experience you have building really large, amazing apps like Google Docs and Google Plus, I mean, Gmail. These are very large, very complicated apps. And we've had to build systems in-house to handle that level of complexity and scalability. I mean, what happens when you have 300 developers in the same project, right? You've got to build these layers on top and add structure and classes and libraries. So then we took a step back and said, what if we take that fresh approach and bake that stuff into something that's understood more natively by the platform? What if we actually cut out some of those layers and gave it to you just straight up and gave you a language that is maybe more familiar to developers from a Java or C-sharp or ActionScript background, or gave you the kind of modularity that allows you to scale from functions to classes to libraries to packages to large applications? And I think if you can give it to a developer in a very friendly, very fast and iterative development cycle, again, learning some of the lessons we learned from GWT or Clojure Compiler, that Google itself will be more productive building amazing apps for the browser. But then if you open source and release it, we hope that a lot more developers out there will be building more complex, more interesting apps for the web itself. And as long as those apps land on the web, that's a win for Google and that's a win for the web.
Right. And we should mention, I don't know if we mentioned at the top that when we first brought you in, that you do work for Google, right? And
you're, I'm a developer advocate with the Dart team here at Google.
Right. So when you say we wanted to do this, you're talking about at Google, you wanted to build this new system so that you wouldn't have to do all this extra stuff necessarily, right? I mean, you wanted to build something that would be more understood natively by the things that you're doing at Google.
Yeah, and I think serving our internal customers is an important goal, but I think also serving the external world is as important and personally probably a little bit more important to me, because this is an open source project and this is part of Chrome and we are part of the open web for the web itself. And so we've been open source since October 2011, receiving feedback. And so this really is something we're trying to put out there and say everyone can participate and we want to solve many people's needs.
Right. Does the history of the language go back further than that, though? You said you've been open source since 2011.
October of 2011, yes.
How old is the project, or how much before that was it in use or in development at Google?
That's a good question. So I joined right around 2000. I joined the project around October 2011. So I'm not that versed in what happened really before that. I can say that we open sourced quite early in the process. I mean, what we launched October 11 is fairly different than what you see today, largely in part because we're open and we've gotten a lot of good feedback internally, externally. But it is kind of interesting to look at the influences to the Dart language itself. It certainly has influences from Java, JavaScript, C Sharp, and I would say certainly Smalltalk. A lot of the team has a strong Smalltalk background, and so you're seeing Smalltalk-isms also show up in the language. And I think it's important to point out that this kind of take the best of what other developers know and bring it into the language is part of a core design tenet, in that we really wanted this to be a familiar language you could learn in an hour or two. I think that's really important. We took a little flack, you know, when we first launched. People were expecting the world's next Haskell, and we wanted more than five users. And so we said, you know, let's go ahead and add semicolons, curly braces. But yeah, actually, what we really did was say, let's take the constructs and the syntax that's familiar to most developers across these platforms and just kind of try to make things a little bit more terse and developer-friendly. And so that was an explicit design goal. But certainly, you see influences from across the board.
Yeah, certainly when I was looking at some of the code examples online, it was pretty easy to pick up. I mean, I could see, oh, yeah, there's the curly brackets, semicolons. Okay, I know what's going on here pretty quickly. If you're familiar with other languages, I think people will be able to pick up on it rather quickly. So that's really good.
Good. We've seen that time and again. Hackathons, internal tests, hour or two, boom, they're writing apps.
Yeah, exactly. Now, one thing you mentioned I wanted to follow up on is because this is running through, in most cases, unless you're running the Dartium browser, right? You're yep. going to be compiling this down to JavaScript. So
yes.
how can you tell, or can you tell how much this is being used out in the wild, so to speak, by other companies or other developers? Is there a way for you to tell, I know that this app was written in Dart first and then compiled down to JavaScript?
Well, from a user's perspective, they won't know this, right? It's just running in using the main HTML and JavaScript functionality. From our perspective, we monitor things like GitHub activity and mailing lists and Google+. And so, part of my job is keep a finger on the pulse of the community. Another interesting way to kind of measure how we're doing is looking at Pub, our package manager. So every vibrant ecosystem out there, Ruby, Python, Java, et cetera, they've got great package management systems and hosting services. Dart is no exception. We affectionately call ours Pub because you play darts in a pub. And so there you can watch people from throughout the world open sourcing their particular Pub packages like MongoDB drivers or Redis drivers or UUID generator or client-side MVC frameworks. I mean, the list goes on and on, but I love watching people, you know, the rate of uploads onto our Pub hosting service. That's a great sign.
Yeah. So you can tell from community activity, but not necessarily from doing some sort of a crawl on web pages. I would expect at Google you would have the functionality to go out and run a robot or something that goes out and figures out, oh, yeah, that app was developed in Dart, so we can, you know, chalk that up on the board or something like that. But
yeah, no, we could probably do that, and I think that's something we'll do in the future as we get closer to a 1.0 release. But right now we're still in sort of a beta period and getting a lot of good feedback day in, day out. And so we haven't yet launched 1.0. And so I think once we launch 1.0, everything starts to shift into that production mentality.
Yeah. So let me ask one more question before Randall jumps back in, because I know you said small talk, I think, and I'm sure he's chomping at the bit. So let me just ask this. Like, do you have some examples maybe for people that are listening of applications that were written using Dart that people might either be familiar with or at least some good examples just to throw over to say, look, you know, when you go on to whatever, Pandora or something, they're using Dart for this, or they use Dart to create this thing.
Yeah, no, because we haven't hit 1.0 yet, we haven't done the real loud message to the outside world, you can go build your next app in Dart yet. We have some internal projects here, unfortunately I can't talk about, that are using Dart. And so that's great, we're working with them. And then we've been working with very early adopters in the outside world as well, but nothing other than just kind of fun little games and samples that I could point to and say, that's written in Dart. I think everything changes when we launch the 1.0. That's a strong signal to the outside world that they themselves can start building on this for their job. And that's when the fun really starts.
So this isn't 1.0 yet. Do you envision any non-backward compatible changes between now and 1.0?
Excellent. Yeah, great question. So when we had our M1 release, which was just saying, okay, this is our first milestone since launch, at that point, we had the language spec firmly baked out, and we don't anticipate any backwards-breaking changes to the language itself. Since the M1 up till today, we've been working very hard on the libraries. And you can sort of think of it like a layer cake, right?
Sure.
Fix up the language, then build up the libraries. We're now going very fast through the libraries and building Dart libraries that feel like Dart. That's one of the nice things. We've been writing Dart code for, you know, since 2011. I hope that, the rate of changes breaking there for the libraries will slow down pretty soon. And at that point, I think the platform will be in a pretty good, stable state. I think our goal is to do 1.0 sometime this year. We're pretty aggressive with that, and we want to move fast, which is why I think we're getting trying to ask for all the feedback now and get in all the breaking changes now.
Great. So the size of the Dart compiler plus the libraries is probably a substantial number of lines of code. Is this an example of how well this scales for large projects?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we really are building this to scale up from, say, 10 lines of code, which is, you know, that's how all web apps start, just a couple functions in HTML file, all the way up to a million lines of code. I mean, that's not unheard of in the kinds of apps that we envision that here at Google we certainly do every day, but we want to enable developers outside the world, outside the Google, to do as well. So I think I don't know the exact numbers, but exactly. Looking at the Dart to JS compiler is a great example of a multi 10,000 line program that people work in every day and are happy and productive.
And so when you have teams like that, you have to have team development practices like a good unit tests and the ability to share code with others. How does that work with Dart?
Yeah, that's a good point. So out of the box, again, remember Dart's much more than a language. So it's also got a great core set of libraries. Certainly, you've got the standards like a great collection library with queues, maps, sets, lists, all that good stuff. But we also ship out of the box with a unit test library that looks sort of RSpec-y, if you're familiar with the Ruby world. And we also have a great mock library that sits on top of that unit test library. And then on top of all that, we've got a WebDriver library as well to run your browser tests. And also, out of the box in the Dart SDK, we ship a headless version of Chromium, or in this case, Dartium, so you can run all your web or any tests that require a browser, you can run them from the command line.
Oh, nice.
And so this is really cool because then we've worked with a continuous integration service called drone.io, and they connect into your GitHub. So you'll push your code to GitHub, drone.io will pick that up, and run the Dart VM there, all your unit tests. He'll fire up the headless version of Chromium, run all your other web tests there, and then just give you this nice little badge, green or red. And it's that kind of just really slick development cycle that we want to give you all out of the box.
Well, I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Darling.org.
That sounds great.
Yeah. So we should probably also mention it, and maybe we could talk about this a little bit later, though, is, again, certainly we ship the language and libraries and unit tests and all that good stuff. We also have an editor, which is a completely stripped down and rebuilt from the ground up on Eclipse that gives you just enough for you to write, develop, debug, refactor Dart code. And so, again, because Dart is a statically analyzable language, we can, in real time, analyze your code and give you those little yellow and red squigglies in your editor saying, this might be wrong, this might be, you know, incorrect. We also give you features like code completion. I mean, these things are critical when you want to scale up to more than a couple developers or more than a, you know, more than a couple 10,000 lines of code. But what's really getting people excited is our web UI library. Now, a lot of people are familiar with the new platform features on the web coming out called Web Components, which allows you to create actually new tags for HTML and allows you to encapsulate the structure, style, and behavior of those tags. So you can imagine someone creating like a hug tag or a smile tag or a register, you know, register for my event tag and hide all the complexity that may be arising from building apps today. Those are really great features and they're coming soon, but because Dart has to compile the JavaScript, we've actually built a compiler that will turn the fancy new web component technology into vanilla JavaScript and HTML for you. So we're building a very embracing the DOM, dynamic, data-driven, modern client-side app similar to web components in Angular, all in Dart, and we compile all that down for you as well. And so you're able to can be really productive and still deployed to the modern web. That's cool.
So there are dozens of really, really interesting JavaScript libraries coming in. I'm most familiar with jQuery and jQuery UI because I'm using it on a couple of projects.
Sure.
How does Dart eliminate the need for those kinds of things, or does it play well with those, or somewhere in between?
Now, that's a good question. So we ship a DOM library that has been refactored to feel like Dart code. And so we've cleaned up the way you program the browser. So we've more or less eliminated the need for jQuery, which has done the same thing for JavaScript, really. It's made programming the browser and the DOM feel like JavaScript, and it's obviously extremely successful. So we feel like we've been able to do a good job there in the Dart world. I mean, Dart ships actual lists, And so we can clean up the DOM API and actually return real Dart lists instead of the weird DOM lists, for instance. But when you do encounter the need to use, you know, one of the obviously innumerable amount of JavaScript libraries out there, we do have a package called JS Interop. And that allows you to reach out into the JavaScript world from Dart and use that functionality. A good example would be the Google Maps API. You can access the Google Maps API, which itself is written in JavaScript, from Dart code. And it works either in the Dart VM or when you compile the JavaScript.
And does it allow for callbacks to be given? So I give it the equivalent of a JavaScript callback, but I write it in Dart?
Exactly. Yeah, so you'll create proxies into JavaScript objects. You can create callbacks. In fact, a good example of using callbacks is JSONP, which is a pretty common way to do a lightweight, RESTful web services from browsers. Typically, you'll get some JSON data back, and then it'll want to dynamically on the client side run a function that just consumes that JSON. Well, you can do that from Dart with the JavaScript interop library and by just constructing a callback object.
Okay, so we've talked about all the great things about this. Let's start talking about some of the warts. What parts of JavaScript leak through that actually limit what you can do in Dart?
Wow, that's a good question. So we've certainly looked through the lens of this has to compile the JavaScript when we design language features. I think the example that always comes up would be we've always wanted to add non-local returns to the language, but we couldn't figure out a good way to actually compile that down into JavaScript. And so that's an example of a feature where it'd be great to have, but we couldn't figure out a performant way to do that, and so we didn't add that feature. But generally speaking, I think the Dart to JS guys are really good. I mean, these are some of the guys that also built V8, Chrome's fast JavaScript engine. So if anyone knows how to produce JavaScript that runs well in today's modern JavaScript engines, it's these guys. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. And so they've been doing a good job at taking the exact semantics and behavior of the Dart language and libraries and making them work in JavaScript.
I wanted to also bring up a feature that's sort of interesting, isolates. Yeah. I don't know how you pronounce that. Talk about what that is, because it looks really interesting.
It is really cool. So as many people know, even the phone you have today in your pocket has multiple cores. And again, we want to allow modern web apps and the modern platform to take advantage of all the great hardware like multiple cores. Well, traditional systems have been using a concurrency model, shared memory threads. The problem with shared memory threads is it's very easy to get into deadlocks, and now you have to add complexity like mutexes and signals and all this stuff. And it certainly can work. There's some really slick libraries and other platforms to make threads work. But again, when you want to take a fresh approach to these things, it's a good opportunity to say, is there a better way to achieve concurrency? And a safer way to achieve concurrency actually was or popularized by Erlang, which has a great actors model or process model in which you spawn these individual, very lightweight mini processes that live within the same VM or outside the VM, and they communicate with each other via sending messages back and forth. Now, the nice thing about this is one process doesn't know the internal state of another process, and communicating to another process or actor means you don't share any state. You send a message, that message is copied and delivered to the other process or actor, and then he can go about his business. So we took that model and brought it to Dart, affectionately called isolates, where you will spawn, say, any top-level Dart function. You can say, I want to run this in an isolate. And then the VM will say, okay, no problem. I'm going to create, essentially, an isolated memory heap. And he will then potentially run that in another, thread in a thread pool or another process, kind of implementation details. And then once you have these multiple lightweight isolates running around your system, you can then send them messages. And and each isolate can, again, take advantage of the multiple cores or thread pools. Or even you can extract this model to say, I want to run multiple VMs in my system. And those VMs communicate to each other via the isolate model. And then you can go even a step further. And again, this is how we think it might play out. This doesn't actually work today, but you can see where we're going. Is even run an isolate on the client in your browser and an isolate on the server in the Dart VM that runs on the server as well. And take that same abstraction model and communicate back and forth there. And so we think it's a really extensible, lightweight, but very safe way to get concurrency.
So I've been around Unix for a very long time. And whenever anybody said, how do you do threads in Unix? I said, it's spelled F-O-R-K. because I knew that forks were a whole lot safer than threads. And even when threads started to be answered, I started seeing the same problem over and over again. People say, well, I'm trying to program with threads because I need to do that because I'm running on Windows or because I think it's going to be faster. And then we run into all these problems of shared memory stuff. I like that you've gone back to the separate, you know, share nothing sort of space, because I think that's a much more successful model in the long run.
Exactly. And it's really cool because isolates themselves compile down to JavaScript. So the modern web platform has this great feature called Web Workers, where you can spawn a separate JavaScript program that runs outside the main loop, and you communicate to it by passing messages. Dart isolates compile down to Web Workers. So you still get all this awesomeness, you know, even when you compile the JavaScript.
And okay, so we were doing warts for a second. There were any other main things that JavaScript is limiting you to that you would have liked to have go away someday?
I don't know. I feel like we've done a pretty good job at hiding some of the complexity of the browser platform today, either by providing new constructs of the language, like Dart has an optional static type system. And so you could say, this, I expect this variable to be a string, or you could say, you know, the third parameter on this function, I expect to be an int. But the nice thing, of course, Dart's, it's an optional static type system. So, again, it's about this very fast iteration cycle. Sometimes you don't want to deal with the ceremony of types, so you can leave the types off. And sometimes you're really confident with the design of your app, so then you put the types on. So it's very flexible there. So we've done a good job there. And then the compiler does a pretty good job hiding, you know, the differences. That's the difference, really, between something like CoffeeScript and Dart. CoffeeScript still has to deal with the same libraries and semantics of the language. So it has to, I think, probably do more to provide the developer a different experience. With Dart, we're out of the box saying this is a different semantics, a different language, and so we can just provide a really good and smart compiler in between you.
Now, so you said Smalltalk earlier, which, of course, my ears perked right up. Obviously, the collections class is something that's probably models a bit of what Smalltalk had. Do you also have things like blocks, like anonymous functions?
Yes. So, yeah, one of the things I personally really like about Dart, and I have a strong Java background, a Ruby background, C background, is that Dart is not a ceremonial language. So people might be like, oh, it needs classes and libraries and all this. That's just when you scale up to that. And it's there when you need it, and I'm really happy it has that. But you can write apps that are just functions. In fact, there are many apps that we've written which are just a main function and a bunch of functions, and you're good to go. And one of the reasons it's not ceremonial and very lightweight is because you can do inline or anonymous functions. In fact, this gets really handy when you do a lot of callback systems. So Dart, like JavaScript, is a single event loop-driven system. So every isolate is just a single event loop. That is, no threads are running, accessing the state there. And so to get a callback when something happens later, you can just register. The easiest way to do this is to register an anonymous or inline function to your callback right there. And the syntax is very lightweight. And you don't have to go create like an anonymous inner class or anything that heavy at all, as you might do in other languages. But because Dart runs in a single event loop, asynchronous programming is the menu of the item of the day every day. So we've also built an object-oriented constructs to help you deal with asynchronous programming. So, of course, you can use callbacks. But as any Node programmer would tell you, callbacks can get a little tricky when they get really deeply nested. And so we've built in the platform a system called futures. Now, a future is a promise, if you will, for a value to be returned later. It's kind of like an object-oriented callback in a sense. But when you bake this kind of primitive into the platform, now you're able to compose and chain asynchronous methods together to make them feel a little bit more sane or logical than all these deeply nested callbacks. And so that's a nice bit of Dart library that we provide.
So I imagine you see this mostly as the single-page apps where you like Google Maps or something, where you're sitting in one page, it's not refreshing all the time, but different parts of the UI change based on what's going on. What is in Dart that makes it – is there anything in Dart that makes it easier to talk to server-side to get access to, say, real HTML or maybe JSON data or something?
Absolutely.
What's the interface look like going that way?
Yeah, and so this kind of goes back to our DOM library that we've taken a really nice, fresh approach to and say, if someone were to build a modern DOM library for Dart, what would that look like? Now, one of the big things that made the modern web platform so powerful today is this function called XML HTTP request. Well, right there, that name's kind of weird. XML HTTP request. Now, this is the thing that allows you to programmatically reach back to your server, get some data like HTML or JSON. But when's the last time anybody ever achieved XML data with XML HTTP request? And so we've cleaned up the name, right? And now the name in Dart is just HTTP request. And so that's really nice. You know, those kind of just cleanups right there. And then we've said, okay, we've gone a step further and said, well, traditionally that would have been this complex. I don't know if you've ever done AJAX type, but you have to do the right order. You have to call a send, and then you have to call an open. And so we've cleaned all that up. And you say, I just want to get a URL. And then that returns a future. And then you just say, when that future is complete, then run this code. And so we've been able to take what traditionally would be like 6, 7, or 8 lines of code. And of course, you know, don't get me wrong, jQuery has helped fix this up. And so back in Dart, we fixed it up as well. You can get down to 2 lines of code. And once you've loaded in the JSON, we have a JSON parser. Again, all the capabilities that are in the browser you get access to with Dart. Just, it feels like you're writing Dart code. It feels just more like it's all been built together by the same team. So that's nice.
Cool. We have a question from the chat room from Tech Dino. He wants to know, it looks like Dart requires Java, but I think what he means is a Dart editor requires Java. Is that always
Dart editor
the case?
Does require Java. That's correct. The nice thing, though, is you don't need the editor to write Dart code. We ship a plugin for Vim. We ship a plugin for Sublime. There's even one for Emacs in there. And then, obviously, we have our stripped-down, you know, lightweight Dart editor. But then even the JetBrains guys, the guys that make IntelliJ and WebStorm, have a Dart plugin as well. So hopefully there's an option for everybody. But at the end of the day, Dart's easy enough. You can just fire up a text editor, get the command line SDK. If you like to rock the command line, go for it, and you're good to go.
Cool. Oops, sorry, bad handoff. We usually have a really great handoff, but apparently I type too fast. What is the basic development process look like? Is it iterative? Am I writing little bits of the application and slowly working my way out? What's it feel like to code a Dart app from scratch?
Sure. No, it's very iterative. Again, something that works really well for the web today. You just want to write some lines of code and hit reload in your browser, and we deliver that same experience. In fact, this is the first time I've seen where a structured, statically analyzable language with a rich set of libraries and a ecosystem of packages allows you to still just write a couple lines of code and hit reload in your browser. And this is in large part due to Dartium, which is, that version of Chromium with the Dart VM embedded in it. And then our compiler to JavaScript is quite fast itself. And so, for instance, one of the things that the editor does is it watches for changes in your files. And as soon as you make a change, it'll just in the background run that compiler. So when you request say, reload your app in, say, Firefox to do some testing there, it just on the fly compiles your app to JavaScript and serves that right up for you. So very fast iterative cycles. One thing, even the language design allows for this very fast iterative development cycles. In traditional statically typed languages, usually you have to prove your worth to the ceremonial type checker in that the compiler will go through every line of code and make sure the entire world checks out before it lets you run that app. Now, that can really slow you down in development cycles and fast iterations like web developers are expecting. Because let's say you want to just test this feature over here on your left, but there's one tiny little bug that you know about way over here on your right. Now, you're never going to touch the code over there on your right during your testing. And so you don't care about that tiny little error. All you care about is the code that you're working on now. Dart, in many, many cases, will allow the program to compile, even though, say, its analyzer says, I think that might be wrong over there. But that's great, because that means that before you get in this really fast development and testing loops that's really important to have, you don't have to first prove the world is correct before you just load up the app. And so I personally really like that. That means I can fix the problems in the area of the code that I'm testing and working on without having to first go fix a whole bunch of unrelated problems as well. And so that just really enables me to write a little bit of code and hit reload, and that's important.
So a couple of people in the chat room have also asked, you know, when can we expect to see this in Chrome versus Chromium or in other browsers? You know, because it seems like, you know, it's nice that you compile to JavaScript because JavaScript is so widely used and all the browsers work with it. But all these great features, it seems like that's a little bit of a bottleneck. Like, it would be nice if you could just go straight from Dart to running in the browser. So when can we see, or is there a way, maybe there's a way existing to get it into Chrome via an extension or something? I don't know.
That's a great idea. Today, we're just working so hard and getting to that 1.0 state. And I think once we've hit 1.0, we're in a much better position to land anything on the web platform. What we don't want to do right now is put anything, say, into Chrome, which obviously ships to end users, while we're still tweaking and playing with it. One of the nice things about the web is you can still go to the Tim Berners-Lee's original web page, and it will render in your browser. And so that just means that the web takes very seriously backwards compatibility. And so it's important for us to get into a much more stable state. So it's hard for me to speculate when. I can tell you the team is working very hard and is quite aggressive to hit this 1.0 mark. And probably the best way that developers can help us get to Dart, you know, in Chrome, for instance, is just test out Chrome and send us feedback and be loud and vocal. Like if you want this in, so let us know what we're missing and then just like tell your favorite Chrome rep that you want to see this.
So it sounds like now's a really good time for people to get involved and try things out because, like you say, you're in this mode of, you know, trying to make sure everything's stable and working before you start rolling it out to the world.
Now is good. And there's so many ways to get involved. Again, open source project. We have external committers, non-Googlers committing to the project. We've taken innumerable patches. I can't count them all. We have an authors file. You can go see there. We're on GitHub. Mailing list, Google Plus. Yeah, so tons of ways to get involved from just, hey, I like this or I don't like this to here's a patch, please commit it for me.
Right. So before I ask that question, let me ask you one other question because it's just personally interesting to me. So I'm taking the Udacity class on building HTML5 games. And,
yes,
and you talked about JSON. You talked about JSON a lot. So now I'm curious, can I go back and rerun some of those exercises using Dart?
Oh man, so funny you should mention this. So for those of you, so there's a great Udacity course from my buddy Colt here on the team to build HTML5 games all with JavaScript, and it's really slick. You should totally check it out. But for those who are interested in checking out Dart and building HTML5 games, there's some of our buddies in the Dart community recently started a port of that game to Dart, and that's on GitHub as well. And so I believe it's called Darty Grits, because the original game is called Grits. So now you can check out Darty Grits. Hopefully Google or your favorite search engine will find that for you. We're first porting that, and then we're going to make it feel like Dart code. Like if you were to write this in Dart, what would it look like? So it won't be line to line. It'll be, let's take advantage of the cool parts of Dart to build that. I'd also say a plug for dartgamedevs.org. My buddy John runs that. He's got a lot of awesome packages, like a game loop or an asset pack or... and a sound library. So if you're interested in building games, I think Dart is actually really cool. And one note I should probably say is we've been pleasantly surprised by the amount of interest in Dart from ActionScript developers, who, of course, write a ton of awesome games. Flash games are really popular on the web. And I think they're looking for a way to bring their games to mobile, for instance, and they want a language that looks and feels more like ActionScript. Dart turns out to be that language. And so we're seeing more game interest from that crowd as well. So I think that's an area ripe for... innovation and fun. We also have Box2D libraries, so I think lots of good ways to get started. Grits, the game from the Udacity course, uses Box2D. That's already been ported to Dart as well, so I feel pretty good this port's going to go quite fast.
Yeah, cool. Well, now I'm excited. I'm excited to get back home and continue on with
the
course.
Cool. Yeah, so, Darty Grits.
That's check great.
They love patches.
I'll definitely check it out. So, so now next step is, now that I know that my personal interest is satisfied, what's the next step? It looks like there's some pretty good tutorials. Are there any tutorials you recommend to get started with Dart?
There are some tutorials, yeah. So we have a great book that's been open source put on the website called Dart Up and Running. That's probably the best way to say just get acclimated to the language and libraries. It's short. You can read in like an afternoon. It's very, it also runs you through a quick multi-user chat app. So, you know, getting your feet wet, downloading the tools, that's all on the website, dartlang.org. When you're ready to, say, graduate to building more complex web apps, we've got a series of tutorials on, hey, what is this DOM thing I keep hearing about? How do I get JSON data so I want to build something with a real framework. How do I use web UI? How do I get live dynamic two-way data binding? How do I write my custom elements that, you know, I can then throw onto web pages? Those are also on dartlang.org. And then when you're ready to graduate from that, go check out pub.dartlang.org. That's where all the community packages and the packages we ourselves produce here in the Dart project. And that's where you start to pull in like, okay, I want a game loop library. I want to talk to MongoDB. Having that package manager makes it super easy to just say pub install MongoDB and then boom. Your project can now connect to a database. So that's, I think, where you'll graduate to.
There's one other thing that I saw in the documentation as I was going through, trying to prepare quickly this morning. I only ever leave myself to the very last second to prep for these shows. I'm so sorry about that. But
keeping you on your toes. Yeah,
yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, you know, I have other real world things I have to do, too. So this is the labor of love. I have to I gladly give my time for every week, but it's just a limited amount of time. So checked versus unchecked mode, or checked versus some other production mode, whatever it's called.
Production
What's that
mode.
About?
Oh, this is a great question. So, one thing we want to do is make Dart very developer friendly, but we don't want to sacrifice speed. The guys that started the Dart project, they have a great history in building really performant virtual machines. So they came to us from the V8 project, which is Chrome's fast JavaScript engine. And before that, the Hotspot project, which made Java fast, and other Smalltalk engines as well. So these guys know virtual machines. And so when you want to deploy your app into production, that should run in the fastest mode possible. That's production mode. In that mode, the VM is doing the type inferencing and doing all the good tricks that it knows how to do to run fast Dart code. In development, though, when you're in the editor and you're setting debug breakpoints, you want to track down that problem, you want to get a lot more feedback from your development environment. One of the feedbacks you'd love to get is, say, if you try to pass in an integer where you said you expected a string. Now, Dart is an optionally statically typed language, which means that in production mode, those type annotations don't exist. The production virtual machine runs as if those type annotations were not added to the code. Mm. It turns out, though, that the VM guys don't really need those type annotations to make it really fast. They can just infer the behavior of the code. But in development, you really do want to know, hey, I threw in an int when I expected a string. In checked mode, which is really development mode, it will throw an exception when you try to send in a variable of a type you did not expect. And you get nice feedback right at that point. You can fix the bug, and off you go. The more type annotations you add as well, the better the analyzer can do in inferring potential errors and warnings as well. But in production mode, you want to go as fast as possible so it runs without those type annotations.
Now, as a developer, you sounded like you can set breakpoints. Can you do single stepping and variable examination
and
things?
Absolutely. And this isn't unique to Dart. I mean, JavaScript can do this in dev tools, and obviously most other languages can do this as well. But we have a nice fully featured editor. And so you can sit right in the editor, set a breakpoint, and load up your app over into Dartium. And then when the Dartium is running and it hits that point in the code, it will fire the breakpoint. Your editor will literally flip back in front, and the debugger pops up, and it shows you exactly where you were in the code. So you have this really nice debug connection between Dartium and your editor to give you that kind of experience. Or if you were to build an iOS app or an Android app or other platform apps, I mean, that's how it works, right? You sit in a nice editor, and you have the debugger, and you've got your runtime emulator over here, and it all just kind of connects and works. You get that same experience when you program Dart.
And does that also include, say, on-the-fly code compilation, so I can run some code in that context?
So I don't think we have that ability right now, but I think the team is working on a way to add, you can write short little snippets in the editor once you hit a breakpoint and evaluate expressions. It's not there today, but I believe they're working on it.
Because that'd be really cool, because I'd have to, of course, then send that JavaScript over to the Dartium and say, hey, I need to run this.
Well, in
right
that case,
now.
It wouldn't be JavaScript, and I think all that would really do is just run in the virtual machine and go run that expression and get you the result of that expression.
And how about the integration of change control tools like Git with the Dart editor? Is that integrated?
The Dart editor doesn't have SCM or source control management built in, and that's an explicit design decision for us. We really envision the Dart editor to be this very lightweight, very focused tool to help you get up and running in Dart. We expect that people will graduate to more full-featured editors like Eclipse or IntelliJ when they're ready to, say, step up to something with, you know, a rich plugin ecosystem, et cetera. Or step themselves back down to Sublime, and then maybe they're more comfortable on the command line there. But Dart editor is really just how can we help you experience Dart in the easiest way possible.
So what's the prerequisites before I want to get started with this? Should I know a lot about JavaScript programming? Should I know a lot about object-oriented programming or working with classes and objects and things like that? What should I know before I come to this so I won't be frustrated?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So Dart is a class-based object-oriented programming language. It's also very friendly to functions. Functions are first-class classes themselves. So you should know the basics, I think, of another object-oriented programming language. That definitely helps. One thing we're finding, though, is Dart's kind of an on-ramp for developers who don't know much about programming the browser to be able to come to the web. And so I would say you don't really need to know that much about programming web to use Dart. And so we've built a set of tutorials that actually assume you don't know anything about web programming. So we start very at the beginning. What's an element? What's an attribute? How do you construct a new paragraph? You know, how do you get text to show up in your page? And that's good. Like, we don't want to have to make you know 15 years of web experience, you know, to be able to program a web app. You should be able to get a comprehensive platform that provides everything you need, documented and out of the box, and boom, you're now writing web apps. And so, you don't need to be a web developing guru to use Dart.
Awesome. And also about presentation layers and MVC and MVP and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Since you're not using anybody else's library for that, that's all built in, I guess, to the Dart environment. How would you describe how a large application scales in terms of model view controller or whatever paradigm you use?
Yes, this is one of my favorite topics. Yes, because this is really where the rubber hits the road. So we've certainly seen a lot of interest in Dart, the language and the tools for the reasons we talked about today. But what really gets people saying, oh, the light bulb starts to go off, when they see our web UI library or package. The web UI package gives people that structure in the browser. So the Dart language gives you structure when you're kind of architecting your code. Web UI gives you structure when you're actually architecting your web app. And it builds on top of new platform features like web components to allow you to encapsulate all those gory details when you have to build a modern web app. So here's a good example. If you view source on Gmail today, what are you going to see? You're going to see 1,000,000,000 divs, all with obfuscated class names everywhere. Now, that was all produced by a machine, but there is no semantics in there. It's crazy hard to read. It's almost impossible to understand. That's all implementation details. Now, what has 20, 25 years of object-oriented programming taught us, if not to encapsulate implementation details behind a nice abstract interface? Well, we're now delivering that same exact experience to the web platform with custom components. So instead, imagine if you were to view source on Gmail and see a message tag. And inside a message tag, you might see a subject tag and a body tag. Like that's the ideas I want to convey when I write modern web apps. I want to declaratively say what I mean. So under the hood, the message tag might be implemented with a whole bunch of divs or whatever, but that's implementation detail, right? We don't need to concern ourselves with that. That same exact experience is how we see modern Dart web app developers work, in that you can build these custom components that hide the divs and the spans and the paragraphs or whatever you need to implement the structure of that component. And then you attach some Dart code that hides the implementation of the behavior of that custom element. And now that you've actually got these reusable elements, they're really just components or widgets. And so now, like other successful ecosystems with a widget ecosystem, you can share these things, extend these things. You can even say fancy button extends button. Like that kind of ability on the web platform is going to really unlock awesome apps. That's how you can do it in Dart today, because we have that compiler that turns that code into vanilla JavaScript and HTML for you. And then going back to the MVC thing, so we really have an MVVM, model view view model. Models are what you would think, regular Dart objects with business logic and state. Mm-hmm. The views are these reusable custom elements or the HTML that's produced. And the view model is the Dart class that backs the custom element. So you bind a model to the view model and then display it with the custom element. And if I haven't lost you yet, all together, we have live data binding. So then you can say, if this field on this object changes, automatically update, this bit of HTML over here. And much like how Angular does that simply declaratively in the DOM, that's exactly how it works in web UI as well.
So in that situation where you're creating those synthetic elements, essentially, would I now view source and see those elements? Is there a way in modern browsers to say allow this new element? Or are you, I think you were saying, you're compiling those down so that I would actually still see divs and stuff in my view source?
Yes, that's a good point. So some of these platform features are landing in browsers today. So recent versions of Chrome have support for some of the features of web components. And so it really depends on what browser you're in. Now, as more browsers land these great new web components features and functionality, our compiler then can strip away the polyfills and just not have to produce so much code. So today, if you view source, you will see the custom element, but then right underneath it, you will see the implementation details. As more browsers land the feature called the Shadow DOM, which is the encapsulation mechanism for custom elements, the implementation details will just disappear. And you'll just see the custom element there in view source. And to be sure, like the stuff I'm talking about, the custom elements, the web components, Shadow DOM, this stuff is on standards track. Other browsers are excited. This stuff isn't just Dart. This is just modern web platform stuff. We just make it available to you today, which is cool.
Oh, that's cool. So this stuff is already in development on other platforms then.
What I hear is that other browsers are quite excited by this stuff as well. And so I think that's a good sign. We have all the web browser vendors saying, yes, we want to enable a component future for the web.
Right. I love it when a plan comes together, right? So what's next for Dart? I mean, we've talked about a lot of this, but just to kind of encapsulate it, I mean, what's kind of in the near future to get you to that 1.0 release? What kind of things are you working on? And what kind of things can we expect long term from Dart? Where do you see this heading, you know, 3, 4, 5 years? I know that's a long time in project, you know, in especially open source projects. But, you know, what kind of things do you see, you know, eventually, you know, look into your crystal ball and tell us what you think this will look like down the road?
Well, the near term is a lot easier to speculate. I think what you can see is the libraries team working really hard, getting this is the last window where they can really say all these breaking changes based on what we've learned. So I suspect we'll have a couple more weeks, if not, say, 6 more weeks of that. But then I think what you'll see is the bar getting higher and higher for breaking changes as we get closer and closer to a 1.0 release. At that point, then I think we'll switch more into, hey, world, we're in 1.0. Now's the time to start building real stuff for it, because we're not going to be changing the rug out underneath you. And then what I'd love to see is Dart end up in Chrome. That would be fantastic. And, you know, who knows after that? I think what we can just do is continue to encourage developers from all platforms to say, hey, here's a compelling option for you to come to the web. It's you know, it's no longer such a scary place. So if Dart makes sense to you, here you go. It's stable. Have fun and build more awesome things for the web.
So in terms of getting from here to there, what are your, first of all, are you actually accepting, it says, I think you said you're accepting library work and things like that from the community.
Yeah.
It sounds like anything that anybody wants to get involved with, you're happy to look at. What would your request be from people that want to get involved with language development? Not necessarily users, but, you know, people that want to contribute code and things like that. What do you need if people are really excited and want to jump in and start helping?
Yeah, no, that's a great way to put it. Some of the things that, you know, we've always wanted to do in the language is a better way to do async. I don't think anything's gonna happen before 1.0, right? I mean, we've got another stuff to do, but that's certainly something that we'd love to make easier. So people can certainly experiment with like a source-to-source translator. One of the nice things about the Dart to JS compiler is that it also spits out Dart code. So it's really a Dart to Dart. So if one were so motivated to experiment with like, what would a new async thing look like? And then build that translator to output, you know, regular Dart code today and kind of feel that out. Probably a little bit easier, though, to work on would be write more pub packages and play with the libraries we have now and build the packages that you need to build the apps that you envision in your head. So I see people now doing things like routing systems for their server-side Dart, or new custom widgets for their web UI apps. And they can package these up in packages as well and host them on GitHub and then on pub.dartlang.org. But I think in the end of the day, if you're filing bugs and sending feedback to the mailing list, that's the best way people can help, because we can then pull that all in and say, this is how people are using it. Let's go, you know, shift and go in that direction. So I think that's the best way to help.
Okay. And everything is online. I mean, this is an open source project, right? So the
completely open source,
the compiler to JavaScript is all open, all that stuff. You can download and tinker with it.
Open Dart to JS, the Dart editor, you name it, the Chrome inbuild. You can get everything on dartlang.org. And we've got the core of the project on Google Code and the kind of ancillary satellite packages and libraries on GitHub.
Wow, that's great. Couldn't ask for a better way to round up the interview than with that. There's one more question about jQuery. Does it depend on jQuery, or how does jQuery fit in?
So it doesn't really fit in. A lot of jQuery kind of does two things, right, for web developers. One, it makes the DOM palatable and easy to consume. We've done that, or we'll continue to do that with our HTML DOM library. I'm really, really happy with the way that that turned out. It feels like logical dark code, which is, I think, the goal. The other nice thing that jQuery did, traditionally, that is paste over the browser differences all the way back to, I think, IE 6 or 7, and kind of smooth over some of the rocky road parts of web development. Now, in the Dart world, because we've drawn a line in the sand, we said only modern browsers, because that's the future. So we hit IE 9 and up. We have less work to do to polyfill or paste over the differences in different browsers. So that's really good. And we've also kind of eliminated the need to worry about that stuff, which I think is great. And I guess the third thing that jQuery does is it adds some convenience methods like hide or show an element. Those things we envision adding to the Dart HTML library as well. So really, in the end of the day, we hope to provide you all the same reasons you would have done jQuery in JavaScript, just out of the box with Dart.
Awesome, awesome. I remember my other question that I couldn't quite get to. One of the things about single-page apps is that it's the address bar doesn't change for most of them because it's hard to do. Can I make address bar changes so I can do bookmarkable single-page apps?
Yeah, and I see more single-page apps actually do this. So HTML5 has this feature or API where you can manipulate the address bar and push and pop the state of your app. That's all available to you in Dart. Basically, every browser API is available to you in Dart. And so, for instance, we're rewriting our API doc viewer in Dart Web UI, and it's a single-page app, quote, but we changed the URL because what's really important on the web is linkability. So you should be able to go up there, grab that link, send it to someone else, and then they should be able to see the same thing that you see. But I guess the point is that's not specific to Dart. We just get that for free from the modern web platform.
And I have a question for my client, actually. He has a nice brochure site that has, of course, static URLs to show different pages about the different cruises that he offers, technical cruises that he offers. And I was thinking, if I rewrote that as a single-page app, do I still get the SEO from having, like, an Ahref link somewhere in there so that it what it actually is doing is pulling up another part of the app that's already sort of been downloaded or can be, dynamically loaded?
That's a great question. It's a problem that we're going to need to solve, especially because we're building our API app in Web UI. And I think the way to do that is we'll have server-side rendering. And so the package itself, the Web UI package itself, will say, oh, this is a request coming in from some sort of bot. Let me just render it on the server side, send them back statically what they see. Oh, this is a Ajax-y request from a client. Let me just send them down JSON. We don't have this functionality now, but we're keenly aware of this, and it's absolutely on our roadmap.
Cool. Well, we asked a lot of questions, and you've given us really great answers. I'm really excited to go try this thing out now. Is there anything we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
Well, one thing I think is important to point out is that the Dart virtual machine runs in the client and the server. And so this is really cool, and we've seen it time and again where when you have the same runtime that runs in the client and the server, say GWT or Google Web Toolkit, obviously runs Java on the back end and then compile that Java to JavaScript, or Node, which allows you to run JavaScript on the server, and of course the JavaScript in the client. In a Dart world, this is absolutely part of the story. And so it's really cool to be able to write the same code and deploy on client and server. In fact, going back to the Udacity HTML5 course, this is something that they really popularized, in that why shouldn't you be able to run the game state on the server to verify no one's cheating, but of course send that exact same game logic up to the client so they have really fast response times. This absolutely works in Dart as well. In fact, we've got demos and samples of a server-side Dart app running in Heroku, which is a cloud-based hosting provider. And so just understanding that the Dart VM is really this standalone thing that you can run if you have a command line or a browser really opens up the world to be able to share code and eliminate kind of duplicate business logic.
Wow, cool. Okay, well, we're just about out of time. In fact, we're probably a little over time, but this has been such a fascinating subject that I just couldn't let it go earlier.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And so I have to ask my two always wrap-up questions. So what's your favorite scripting language?
Well, I'm going to have to say I have a sweet spot for Ruby.
I understand. That's okay. Ruby is the stepchild of Perl and Smalltalk, my two favorite languages. So
exactly.
I appreciate Ruby programs for that. And the second one, of course, is what's your favorite text editor?
Ah, okay. So text editing would have to be Sublime. But I think when I write real apps, I like Dart Editor or IntelliJ.
Awesome. Awesome. Very cool. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today and talking about this. I know we've had a lot of anticipation for this upcoming show, so I'm glad you took time out of your busy day to talk to us. Really want to thank you for coming on, Seth.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys, and good luck. Thank you.
Awesome. That was Seth Ladd. He's working on the DART project. He is one of the a developer advocate with the DART project. So that's his official title. Aaron, what do you think?
What's that? Oh, sorry. I'm just playing with the DART editor here. I was downloading it while you guys were talking. I was downloading it and getting it up and running. Very easy to do, by the way, which is great. So that's the first thing, is that seems to be a lot of good tutorials here. It seems to be easy for people to pick up, especially if you have previous programming experience. A lot of this stuff is very well formed. So there's a the editor itself, very Eclipse-y, should be pretty easy for people to pick up and use. Like I said, the tutorials are great. The language is built around common structure, of course, like with all its idiosyncrasies, as every language has, but it's familiar enough, at least to me, to go ahead and get started using it. So I think this is great. I mean, I hope that this gets more broader adoption, because I think it fixes a lot of things. And once we get to that, like you said, that 1.0 level, it would be great to have, and I think this is what will help with that, is to have the Dart VM built into at least Chrome. And then maybe later, if it gets, gets more popular, built into some of the other browsers, Firefox and things. But I think it looks really great. I'm going to try it out. I am taking that HTML5 games class that's offered at Udacity. So I'm going to try some of the things that he mentioned, and just in terms of seeing, okay, what would this look like if you used Dart to build this instead of just doing JavaScript. So definitely going to try that out. I think it looks really great. I think people should check it out, see, support the project. I think it has a lot of promise. And so that's always nice, to go into something not feeling like you're, one of 10 users, but feeling like there's actually, this is a growing project and it's something to get involved with now. So, I would encourage everybody to take a look at it at least, and, at least do a few scripts in it, see how it works.
Yeah, I'm just beginning to really get better at JavaScript and playing with jQuery and stuff like that. And this looks like a great way for to kind of like leapfrog over that and get access to everything that I really want in terms of client-side smart applications. My client, Neil Bauman, who runs the Insight Cruises site, is a separate task for me to update the booking application. And we've taken a run at that with Objective-J when I was playing back with that, Cappuccino. And it didn't work very well because I didn't really know Objective-C, so I didn't really have the weight leverage of Objective-J. But it looks like I can get started with Dart and get the same application up and running probably a whole heck of a lot faster. And I was also talking about even the brochure side, which would be really nice to take some of that raw JavaScript that I have embedded in there and maybe make the whole app be a single-page app with a bookmarkable and SEO-friendly URLs as well. So I'm excited by this. I'm probably going to go through the entire tutorial on Dart and start working on stuff. This is, because I say that every week, don't I? I always say, this is such a great project. And then, of course, the next week's project comes along, and then I don't have time. And it's crazy that way, huh?
Yeah, it's also interesting that they're the other thing I really like about it, and I want to say this before we close up here, is that I like how they are planning for asynchronous communication and asynchronous processes and things like that. Because, I mean, we had the Zatonic folks on while you were gone, Randall, and their whole framework, their web framework, is built off of Erlang for that reason, is that it can do a lot of asynchronous processing for web apps. And so it becomes very, very fast for these very large web applications that people are building. And then we had the CakePHP folks on. And so it was a little bit of back and forth there, and from one week to the next. And, they were talking about, well, we've got this great framework, though. We make it very easy to deploy your PHP apps. And, yeah, it may not do things as asynchronously as Erlang, but, it's really good. And so I just like – this seems to be kind of taking all of those things and packaging it up into a really a good combination. Now, again, it's not necessarily a framework. It's a language. But, again, just having that thought in mind is that, we may actually want to do some asynchronous processing here to speed things up. It's really good to hear that they're actually focusing on that.
Yes, and let's hope that Google stands behind Dart in a way they didn't stand behind Google Reader. I'm very irritated at that, but that's another story. Good thing Seth is gone. All right, so you'll hear this, of course, in the post. That's okay. Speaking of past guests, since you were speaking of past guests, that means I'm going to talk about upcoming guests. All right, so Next week, we have Pinto, which is Jeffrey Thalheimer. I forget it. Something like that. Jeffrey, I probably mispronounced your name. It's a localized CPAN. So basically, you can build local instances of a CPAN. And so like your own modules or maybe your own versions of modules. We'll have him talk about that. So, of course, another Perl project. Yay. Then, just added to the schedule, the bacon is back. The bacon is back. John O'Bacon is going to come on the show as a guest once again to talk about Ubuntu Phone, which is a big topic right now. So, where he's going to come on and represent his company, Canonical, to talk about what's going into the Ubuntu phone, why it exists, all sorts of stuff. So just a guest, though. He's just not going to back co-host anymore, so don't worry, Aaron. I'm not getting rid of you guys yet. It's just a guest this time. Poodle, which was supposed to happen a couple weeks ago and didn't, or was it last week? Sorry about that, guys. My email to him did not end up in the important folder. Enough said on that. So he didn't get the confirmation notice. That's an online translation management system. This will be his third time he's been scheduled. If he doesn't make it that time, I don't know. But also just added to the schedule, Weblate, which is also an online translation program. So if you want back-to-back comparisons of online translation stuff, like we promised many months ago, we're actually going to get it this time, but with two different things, okay? And then also, I'm very excited about this. I saw a presentation locally here in the LA area about Ceph, C-E-P-H. It's a distributed object store. It kind of replaces Amazon S3 out of the box, uses S3 protocols. But then it also has a file system built on that you can actually mount as a real file system. And it's redundant, distributed, highly performant, shards automatically, rebalances automatically. It's a really, really amazing open source project. Some big people are behind it to do their, I think they're doing a media delivery, content delivery. So it's very, very fast as well. It's going to be a really, really good show. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, going to say Ceph is really cool. And if people aren't familiar with Ceph, or if they are familiar with Gluster, very similar. They both do object store, and just as a storage person, I happen to know this stuff. So Gluster, they both do object storage and file system or network-based storage as well. They do it all together. So that should be a really, really cool show. Looking forward to that one for sure.
Absolutely. I'll probably put you as a co-host on that one if the timing works out.
Yeah, then. Definitely.
Great. I'm still sending out emails to fill the rest of Q2. I keep lagging a little bit. I'm throwing out just enough to kind of keep the schedule immediately full. But there's still a lot of slots in Q2 left that we should be able to announce coming up in a couple of weeks. You can always see our upcoming slots at twitch.tv/floss. If you follow the spreadsheet link there, you'll see our upcoming shows and who I'm trying to get on the show and who I really want to have on the show. If there's somebody that you want on the show that's not in that list, have the project leader email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. We have a chat room, which we took some questions with today. That comes if you go to live.twit.tv at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays, whatever the local time is here on the west coast of the U.S. You can also follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus. We're up to like 2,000 followers now. It's pretty happy with that. And Floss Weekly on both Identica and Twitter at Floss Weekly. You can follow me personally at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, and also at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. I have about 20,000 Google Plus followers, which drives GTalk crazy because it has to download all those names every time I connect up. So because you can talk to all those guys both on Google Plus and on GTalk. Hate that. Anyway, I'm just back from South America. I had a really great time. No, I did not pet any turtles.
Oh, they're not, man.
They don't allow me within 2 meters of them. So that's a responsibility thing. Hmm. But I did get real close to one. In fact, he walked right in front of me, and then he pissed. Like, what a great way to greet the guests. It was just huge amounts of water, too. It was like, oh, my God. It was like half his shell must have been full of water. It was just amazing stuff. Luckily, it didn't splash on my feet. I would have been really, really sad about that. I have to say, and also, for those of you that have been with me at conferences and other things and community events, you know that my buddy Bill Harp used to go with me to a lot of those. Bill passed away while I was on the cruise. So I just want to send a slight note of remembrance to Bill Harp, dedicating this episode to him. He was only 45, too. Died of a massive heart attack, so it really was sort of devastating for me. Speaking of health, though, I have lost 45 pounds now in the last 6 months. My waist has gone from 38 to 32, and I have great blood pressure. It's all back to normal. It was stage 2 hypertension. Now it's nominal back to what it should be. And because of that, I've been tweeting, of course, and blogging about that and G-plussing about that. My friend Tony Smith, who runs Starship Sofa, which I've read some shows for, has started a new podcast at the URL technicallyfitandhealthy.com. It's four episodes so far. He has invited me to do a taping tomorrow for hopefully next week's episode about what I'm doing. So if you guys want to get more details about the program I'm doing, why it's working, how it works, science behind it, all that sort of stuff, go to technicallyfitandhealthy.com and subscribe to that podcast. And I think I'm going to be on next week's show. Also, I'm taping Saturday a show, a brand new show called GitMinutes.com. It's about Git. And Thomas Ferris Nicolaysen, I haven't pronounced it out loud yet, so hopefully that's close, is interviewing me Saturday for the opening show. We're going to talk about my involvement with Git, which goes all the way back to the second month of its existence, including how I got Linus Torvalds to come and be my fact checker at a Portland Linux users group meeting, which he normally doesn't go to Lugs. And it's a great story. You'll have to listen to that on that show. Okay, enough plugging for me. Aaron, we're almost out of time, but go ahead. Plug what you want.
So real quick, if you want to follow what I'm doing, you can go. The best place to go to is Google Plus and add me to your circles. I'm Aaron Newcomb there. Should be real easy to find me on Google Plus. But if you're a Facebook user or a Twitter user, I'm there too. And all of my stuff gets republished to Facebook and Twitter. So you can follow. You know, if that's your favorite thing, you can follow me there too. But if you want to interact with me, go to Google Plus. If you're going to be down in Oakland tomorrow, there's a Android developers user group meeting down in Oakland at the Pandora headquarters. I'll be there. So if you're watching this today or picking it up in reruns today or tomorrow and you want to say hi to me, I'm not speaking. I'm just attending just out of curiosity. So just if you see me there, come up and say hi. I'd love to meet some folks. So I know there's at least about 100 people locally going. So if you're down there, I'll be there. Definitely come over and say hi.
Awesome. And down to wrap up, probably the longest show ever, but man, what a topic, I tell you. We'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.